Welcome to the Spin Access Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
This week, Jason's going to take the reins. We're going to talk about what?
We're going to talk about prepping for member or member guest tournaments. We are in that season right now where, who's that guy that's on social media? I'm gonna forget his name now because I'm so good at that, but.
Dang it,
who's
I forget
that guy
too.
On social media?
Oh, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, Tyson knows what I'm talking about.
Skip something or Kips. Yes. I don't know what his name is, but he's attacking handicaps.
Yeah, exactly. I really should know. I see his stuff. It's fantastic all the time, but it's members, right? Member guests.
It's good.
It's just amazing, amazing fun out there with your buddies where you're just, hopefully you can string together your three best rounds of your life in one small weekend of the year. So how do we prepare for them?
This will not be a podcast on handicap management, what many people refer to as handicap management. It will not be about that because that's not supported by us.
No, these member tournaments and member guest tournaments, they just keep getting more and more extravagant. The swag that these guys are getting at these tournaments, like, they just keep getting bigger and bigger. And so it is a big deal for a lot of players. It's one of the tournaments that they really do care about.
Yeah,
and they show up and they want to play well, right?
When the entry fee to play your own home golf course has a comma in it,
I guess you should get some swag, right?
You should get some stuff, and there should be some decent prices.
Yeah,
my number one tip, and then I'll let Jason actually talk about the topic, is pick a good partner.
There it is.
There's a lot to that, though. Like, and I'm not just making a joke about the handicapping system, and your partner should be a 27 that plays to a 15. have a 27 handicap, but play to a 15 handicap for real life. Pick a good partner that you get along with and can, you know, tolerate for 54 holes or however long your member guest is. Pick a good partner. But Jason will talk about some actual topics.
Yeah. So it was Yip Strickler. That's who it was. That's Yip, that guy.
That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yip, he's Strickler. Fantastic. But yeah.
He's great.
So, I mean, to Eric's point, I mean, yeah, if you're looking to actually win this thing, let's dive into that right quick, because you don't want a low handicap. Statistically, you're looking for somewhere into the mid to high teens, right? You're looking for someone that's got a lot of pops on almost every hole and has the possibility of stringing their best rounds or a couple rounds in there, because especially you want to be able to do it back-to-back days. And the problem with having a low handicapper is, and I'm sure every low handicapper listening has had this, where, you know, you're going to fire your best round of your, you know, season, and it's going to be 65, 66 or something like that. And you're going to come to the clubhouse and you're going to lose to some net 61. And you're going to think to yourself, wait, so I needed to shoot two better than the course record to tie this guy? Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to turn him into Yip.
Yeah.
We're going to investigate this.
Yeah. If you look at the USGA like chart, they have a chart for tournament expected differentials, you know, and the odds of shooting an exceptional tournament score. To shoot 5 under your handicap for a scratch golfer is way lower odds, I guess you should say.
Yeah.
Right. Way lower chance of it happening than a 25 handicapper shooting 5 shots below his course handicap. Right. So the higher handicappers have a much better chance to shoot much lower than expected because their range of outcomes is much higher.
Yeah, exactly. So outside of that, how can you, as someone that's been invited or you're playing in your own, get ready for that? The biggest thing that I see people when they're prepping for this is that they overtrain. And what I mean by that is you might golf once a week and you maybe hit golf balls before your round. And then all of a sudden you're like, all right, the member's in 2 weeks, and you go out there and you play every day and you practice every day and your body is completely wrecked before you're now going to play 3 more days in a row. Don't do that either. Just continue on your way or set out and know, all right, here's my timeline. Can I start preparing to peak at that date? And this is what Olympic athletes do. You want to prepare so that you give yourself some amount of rest days going into the competition. You don't want to be constantly playing, and then run into the tournament playing, right? Give your body some time to like come back down from that. And that's what you're looking for. So don't overtrain. You can get prepared, but don't overtrain.
Well, and I see in this instance, I see this happen often, and you see it like with my junior players that are getting ready for the state tournament. The closer you get to the to the date of the tournament, because you've built this up to more than what it is, the anxiety starts to kick in. And as soon as you start to hit it bad, it just sort of snowballs. Right. So to your point, if you're somebody who hits balls once a week and now all of a sudden you're hitting balls 5 days a week and you get into that fifth day that is the day before the tournament, and if you're not hitting it like you want, you then create a scenario where, oh no, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. So now you're going into this round thinking that something's wrong with the swing. Now you start tinkering and it just really can get out of hand for people. So I think 100%, like, don't overtrain, have a strategy of how you're going to practice going into that week, then maybe you can minimize the anxiety that you create because you feel like this is more than what it is.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, like member tournaments, they're all the same thing. It's just another round of golf, and all you got to do is just be properly prepared for it. It's just on your calendar, right? Don't freak out. Then we're going to get into next one, obviously, proper planning. So how do you plan to go play in a member? Well, hopefully you can get in a couple practice rounds. Maybe even before. Sometimes they have practice rounds like included in the member, but you want to go there a bit before, right? You want to shot pattern it, take it out. There's a new 3D model on the shot pattern, which is really, really cool. Map out your tee shots, know what tees you're playing from, stuff like that. And you can find that out from, you know, the pro shop or whoever's bringing you out to your member guest and go like, all right, yeah, this hole's this club, this hole's that club. Unless the wind changes, stick to that plan. You're going to be playing match play. Match play is you still shooting your best score. It is not you playing against the other person. And the amount of times that I've seen people go like, oh, well, you know, they hit a bad shot, let me just, you know, lay up here. And then you lay up short to the number that you need to hit in. And that guy now makes this like amazing recovery shot. He's on the green in two and you don't reach the green in two. And had you just not changed your game plan, you would hit your driver and have been fine. And then you would have gotten on the green. And now you lost the hole because you tried to play it too safe. Don't worry. Unless the guy literally blows it out of bounds, don't change your game plan. Like just play your golf, play to the holes that you need to, and you're going to know which holes you're going to stroke on. So just go like, all right, that might be a hard par four. I'm just going to play for a par five and I'm going to use my stroke. Most of the time, if at least one of you guys in your team makes a par, you're going to do well. You know what I mean? Like, I guess, especially if you got pops, like you just get out there, shoot for pars and bogeys. I mean, if birdies come, great, but don't chase them. Don't go like, oh, that guy hit it to 6 feet. I need to hit it to, like, you know, 4 feet. It's like, no, he's probably going to miss that, you know, that putt. Like, just keep playing your game. Don't give away holes. That's the biggest thing for match plays. People just hand holes to other teams.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think enough, especially here in the States, I don't think enough guys play enough match play to understand, you know, sort of that strategy. And honestly, I wish they did, right? I wish there were more match play opportunities, not only for a member or member guest, but also like even our junior golfers. I just think it can just help people understand that there's more to this game than just hitting the ball as far as you can. Sometimes there can be a little bit of a different strategy to the game. And I think match play sort of forces us to get into that mode, unlike stroke play does. And I think it's a great format. Everybody always enjoys it. I'm just always sort of baffled why we don't do it more.
Well, and if your member guest or member is match play, because they're not all match play, but a lot of them are. If it is,
yeah,
brush up on the rules, because the worst thing is when you play out a turn and they recall your shot and you're like, what? You can't do that. You know, just learn the basic rules of match play. Learn what things cause a loss of hole. Learn what things you can or can't do for your partner. Like, you cannot be on an extension of their putting line. They can be on an extension of your putting line, ideally far enough back that it's not a breach of etiquette. But your partner can't be. None of your caddies can be. So learn what the basic rules of match play are and how they differ a little bit from stroke play. Most people out there listening, hopefully you know the rules pretty well, but odds are you probably don't know the stroke play rules as well as you think you do. So yeah. Learn the rules in general better.
Yeah.
But learn the differences between match play and stroke play rules, because you can recall shots if played out of turn. You can overlook penalties incurred by the other team, but you can't agree to waive rules of golf, or else technically you're both disqualified, et cetera, right? So
yep.
Learn the differences in the rules of match play. Building a great at-home practice setup has never been easier. Advances in launch monitors, cameras, training software, projectors, screens, mats, and more. make getting some quality practice in more practical than ever. Tyson, Jason, and I recommend you work with the experts at Carl's Place to create your own dream home simulator or practice station, as we've done in building out our academies and studios. Carl's Place experts will take photos and measurements of your space and optimize everything to create an affordable and awesome place for you to practice and play without ever leaving your home. As thanks for listening to the Spin Axis, you can save 5% store-wide with the coupon code SPINAXIS. You've got to write it down because it's not going to be published on the web at carloveet.com. That's carloveet.com. Learn the differences in the rules of match play.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a good one. And I think, you know, if for anything, if you don't know the rules and then somebody calls you out on one, that can sort of throw your whole mental game, because now you feel like you just literally ruined a round, or it would obviously upset you. And that can throw you wildly off your game, if anything else, right?
Yeah.
I always say too, like going into something like this, you just don't ignore the short game, you know, sharpen the short game. You're going to miss greens and reg. Right. Make sure that the putting stroke, the distance control is good. Again, I think so many people, when they make a tournament bigger than what it is, we get so consumed with our ball striking, and then we don't spend enough time dialing in our distances and our finesse wedges, spending time on the putting green. And you can always make up for a poor ball striking day if your short game is solid. And it's an easier part of the game to improve on faster and dial it in because the club is moving slower. Just don't ignore it.
Yeah, and it's also very frustrating to your playing opponents when you keep getting up and down, and it is going to eat them alive.
Wear them down.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely do that. Quick tip into like putting, if you're giving putts, right? Because now it's match play, you can give putts. Early in the match, give only putts that come up short. I know this sounds terrible, but if we're talking about how to get into your opponent's head, the more that you can induce your opponents to understand that they're going to get free putts that are short, they will subconsciously start leaving putts short when it matters later in the round. So just FYI.
I love that. Like that. Little bit of strategery going on here. I love it.
Now, if we're going to talk about tee shot strategy. So obviously, if you and your playing partner, you got to know your weaknesses and your strengths when you get out there, know which holes that you might want to play it smart. Again, we're still being, you know, aggressively conservative off the tee, but you might want your playing partner to get the ball in play on a hole that you might want to go like, all right, this is a little bit of tighter hole here. I got a stroke, or you don't have a stroke and you got to hit your driver and you got to get it in play. Get one out there that's at least in play first, and then hit, you know, that. And it's totally fine to like talk through that with your opponent, knowing what your tee shot strategy is on every hole.
Yeah. And I think tee shot strategy, going back to like 1 week before, one of the things that I wrote in Lowest Score Wins is find your simple swing thought, but find your pattern with a tee shot. If you're going to play a 30 yard cut, which is a slice, but we'll call it a cut for now, a power fade.
Yeah, I like that.
If you're going to play that 30 yard shot, just play it on every shot. Just hit that shot on repeat. Don't say, oh, this hole works a little bit to the left, I'm going to try to draw it here. Just hit the same shot, right? Unless there's a house or a tree that's right to the left side of the tee box, hit the same shot all the time. Own your pattern. Paul Goito said, after he won at Pebble Beach, I think, he said, I know we're supposed to call it a fade because we're professionals, but when you're 7 irons curving 30 yards, it's a slice. He hit his slice all around the golf course and won at Pebble Beach.
That's right, baby.
Bruce Litsky, for the older school guys, was the same way, right? He hit a slice, but he owned it, and he hit every shot that way. Whether it's a slice, a draw, a high, a low, whatever, just figure out what your tee shot does, especially, and then aim for it and hit that same shot all the time. Whatever you do, hit that shot all the time, get it in play between the tree line, right? Between the ropes, and then you have a chance to get your ball on the green, right? If you're on or near greens in regulation all day, you're going to have a good day.
Love it.
Yeah, exactly. And like your job, again, is you're just, like Eric said, getting in or up and around the greens, especially if all you need to do is make par, right? If you can make par or a little tap and bogey, you're going to have low stress rounds, right? Or your nines or whatever you're playing. You don't want to be grinding out all the time because you tried to like hit it to a tucked pins. Talking into...
Especially if you're playing like 54 holes over a weekend or something like that. That's a lot of golf. Yeah.
So the next thing that I wanted to get into is talk with your partner before and make an agreement that you are not going to apologize for hitting bad shots. Match play or alternate shot.
Is this particularly tough for Canadians?
Very much so, yes. Sadly, yeah.
Sorry, eh?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is, it's a hard thing to do because you feel like you let down your team.
Yeah.
But again, yeah. All you got to know is that your game didn't change. Like, it's not like all of a sudden you're just like, you know, atrocious out there. It's still within your shot pattern to hit some bad shots. It just happened to be on that weekend that you hit one bad shot. But then what ends up happening is now you start like spiraling out there and you're like, oh man, you know, he brought me out here. I should be playing better than this. We're trying to win this, blah, blah, blah. And you just start going, and you spiral out of control. So make a pact that you're not allowed to apologize for anything. There's no reason, unless you're being like actual like asshole and you need to apologize. I guess we can't say that all out. Unless you're actually like, you know, being a mean person out there, that then you should apologize. Okay. So there's no reason to apologize. Just you hit that shot. Just...
Yeah.
Go hit the next one. Like, don't apologize. There's no need to apologize. You're out there for fun. Like, that's it. Like, yeah, sure, there's money on the line, but don't get down. Like, it's a good time. Like, enjoy it.
Bad shots are a part of golf, you know, and sometimes bad shots happen when we don't want them to, but that's not a reason to apologize. Even in this instance, when, you know, you have a partner, if your partner doesn't expect you to hit bad shots, back to Eric's point at the beginning of this, make sure you pick a good partner.
Yeah.
It's an important thing. And again, yeah, some of these rounds are expensive and you put a lot of expectation on them, but if you're going out there expecting that you're not going to hit bad shots, you're already setting yourself up for failure anyways. They're going to happen. And the guys in the Ryder Cup on both sides, Europeans and Americans, they talk about it. That's a tough thing to manage, right? Especially like in an alternate shot situation. Like that's tough, but they don't want you to apologize. They don't.
No.
And if they do, then they're not the right partner.
Yeah. And then last one for me is understanding that most of these places are going to rev up their greens. You're going to go from seven, eight
to show off their golf course.
Yeah.
Right?
Or sure. Stimp and you're going to show up and they are going to be fast greens. When the greens get faster, the breaks will become larger. You need to understand that. So if you're an aim pointer, just know like, okay, you're going to have to start tucking those fingers, get them close to your face. If you're just someone that generally just, you know, sees the break. And especially if it's your own course, if there's no practice round with the green speeds at that speed, it is frustrating where you just show up and all of a sudden your greens are, you know, three faster on the stimp and you know all the breaks. Well, those are gone.
Yep.
they're long gone. So you need to make sure that get into the putting green early, go find what the breaks are now. Again, this is why I like aim point, because you can go out there and you can calibrate your feel. So go out there, see what's a one, stick a tee in the ground, putt to that. It's like, oh yeah, that's low. All right. Well, my one is 1.5 or my one's a two, you know, or tuck those fingers again. And so you're going to find what you need to calibrate when you get out there. You can also make some adjustments. Match play is nice because you can putt after you win the hole. Hopefully you can get back out there and practice, especially if it's a long round, you're not holding up anybody. Hopefully you can roll a couple extra putts. You're not going to lose.
Yep.
You're not going to lose. There's no stroke against that in match play.
Yeah, one of the fastest ways to get acclimated to a faster green, especially, is when you show up to the practice green, roll some 20-footer downhill putts, because that's the one where it feels like you hit it 2 feet and it trickles down to 20 feet.
Yep.
That's one of the fastest ways to get acclimated. And then the other thing about fast greens, the faster the greens, the more effect uphill and downhill have.
Yep.
Right. So if friction, meaning the stimp of the green, and gravity are the two things affecting how far a ball rolls out, oftentimes to hit a 20-footer downhill on a fast green, you feel like you barely tap it. And yet the uphill putt relatively feels like you have to hit it really hard.
Yep.
Because when it's slower, the downhill putt, you might have to hit it 16 feet for it to roll 20 feet. And the uphill one, you hit 24 feet for it to roll 20 feet. But the downhill ones feel like 20 feet. And 2 feet.
Yep.
So the gap feels much bigger on a faster green. So a lot of people leave uphill putts on fast greens short because it feels like, oh, these are fast. And so they get dainty with the uphill ones.
I felt like I hit that so hard and it ended up 5 feet short.
Yeah.
You know, no, you didn't hit it hard enough, right?
Yeah.
And again, the reason that the putt breaks more on those faster greens is because the ball takes longer to roll to the hole. So gravity has more time to pull that ball down the slope. But then as Eric said, and I just watched this at the Memorial tournament last weekend, those greens were literally rolling at a 13. They were like glass. Guys were barely moving their putter for a downhill 20-foot putt, and they were banging that putter up the hill. And I saw the same thing. Many of them came up short.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard to adjust, right? To hit it hard enough to get it up the hill.
I do have one more putting tip, even though putting is not my strong suit yet, is never up, yeah, never in.
Yeah, I like that. That's optimistic.
That's right. Yeah.
Never up, never in is...
No, roll up the distance of the hole.
Yeah. Don't shrink your capture rate. And what I mean by that is,
yeah,
if you're going to miss this hole, or if you're going to miss this putt, we're going to lose the hole. And then people just bang the ball 5 feet past.
Yeah.
Well, I think we wrote in the book, like, oh, at least I gave it a chance. No, you didn't. You rolled it 12 feet past the hole. Like,
it had no chance.
The capture size was smaller than a dime. Like,
yeah,
it was not, unless it hit the exact middle of the hole, you had no chance at all.
Yeah,
right. So stop doing that. They have to get to the hole. There are putts you have to get to the hole because you have to make them. But still, 2 feet past the hole is getting it to the hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that one.
Love it. Awesome.
Where can people find us for more scintillating member guest tips and other topics?
Find us on social media. Let us know how many of these member guests you've played in /won with all our tips. Or you can find us online at thespinaxis.com.
And we get like 10%, right?
I thought it was 20.
We'll talk about it later. Yeah.